want a world, ideally, of zero tariffs, zero non-tariff barriers, and zero subsidies.
The United States and China prepare to meet again on trade. It's Wednesday, November 28th. This is VOA Asia. Hello and welcome. I'm Jim Stevenson in Washington. Find us on Facebook at VOA Asia. Also ahead, complications continue in the recovery of an American's remains. Pakistani students study in rival India. A huge miss in the Chinese retail market. Early human hunting, landing on Mars. It's all on today's VOA Asia. U.S. President Donald Trump and Chinese President Xi Jinping could reach a new trade deal between the world's two largest economies when they meet in Argentina this weekend. That's what White House economic adviser Larry Kudlow said Tuesday after he spoke with U.S. President Donald Trump.
In his view, there's a good possibility that a deal can be made, and that he is open to that. He is open to that. But having said that, some caveats, as always, certain conditions have to be met with respect to fairness and reciprocity, as we've said many times. For example, issues of intellectual property theft must be solved. Forced technology transfers must be solved. Significant tariffs and non-tariff barriers must be solved. Issues of ownership have to be solved.
The United States and China have imposed tit-for-tat tariffs over several months on hundreds of billions of dollars of imports arriving from each other's shores. For more, VOA Asia's Ira Melman spoke with Mark Bush, professor of international business diplomacy at Georgetown University.
That would certainly be encouraging, and the question, of course, is much like Kudlow said, how to deal with some of the caveats attached to that proposition. So the goal seems to be, and perhaps it's a loftier goal than just whatever could happen in the G20 meeting, zero tariffs, zero non-tariff barriers, and zero subsidies. That's certainly a nice aspirational goal, but the question is, in the short term, and especially with respect to intellectual property, what are the markers of success? And that will be key in any meeting that happens in Argentina. Markers for success and timelines on those markers with respect to intellectual property in China.
What do you think that both Donald Trump and Xi Jinping must do, and how far can they each go to reach some kind of a settlement?
Well, the problem is that, as you heard Mr. Kudlow discuss in his news conference, the view on the street is that the U.S. economy is piping along, which is largely true. And that is masking the ill effects of some of these trade tariffs. So the problem for the U.S. is that during good economic times, it's almost as though we can have a trade policy that is backfiring and yet not suffer the consequences. For the Chinese, they certainly want out of this. The way forward has to be, and it's useful to try and envision a way forward, this new initiative in China, the Made in China 2020. The fact is that the Chinese are doing some really interesting things that sound like supporting the emergence of technology-based industries. They are already ahead of the U.S. on many things, including artificial intelligence. And it would certainly be useful for the two sides to think of a deal that, in a way, mimicked what the U.S. and the Japanese signed in the 1980s when the two went to war over semiconductors. We are both investing in similar technologies. We should stay away from subsidies that are actionable, and we should share the benefits of government-sponsored R&D.
What is your prediction for Argentina?
Well, both sides are probably going to try and announce something that looks like a good first cut, and both sides are going to hedge their bets and try and save a little face. But my hope is that in the spirit of what just happened with the midterm elections, and as President Trump retools his trade policy to deal with a Democratic House, that in fact what Larry Kudlow said today might actually be quite inspirational going forward. A world with no tariffs, no non-tariffs, and no subsidies. If suddenly President Trump can channel John McCain and move in a pro-trade direction, that would really be terrific, and not just for the United States, for the global economy as a whole.
You think that's what he has had in mind the entire time?
You know, I really wouldn't want to wage that bet, but I'm telling you, the excitement in hearing Kudlow say that line was almost too much to let pass, and I'm not an optimist by nature, but boy, did I like hearing that line, because in truth, this trade policy has been anything but trade enhancing, and it would certainly be nice as both a political and as an economic effort for President Trump to retool and potentially inadvertently deliver on one of the most pro-trade agendas that could possibly be true at the current moment. That would be fun, but I won't lead your listeners to think that that's a high likelihood. I'm just speculating, wishing.
On Monday, Trump voiced doubts that a deal would be reached when he meets with Xi Jinping Saturday in Buenos Aires on the sidelines of the G20 summit of the world's largest economies. Trump has threatened to impose more tariffs on Chinese exports if the two sides cannot reach what he considers fairer trading between the two countries. You'll find many stories on voanews.com. These are among some of the top Asia stories you'll find there right now. Hundreds of scholars condemn China for Xinjiang camps. Hong Kong Democrats eye rural political reform. China launches probe into first gene-edited babies. More than 200 Chinese arrested in Cambodia for online scams. French-American man abandons attempt to swim Pacific. Expanded coverage of these stories and much more can be found on Facebook at VOA Asia. Also stop by the voanews.com website. VOA Asia continues. I'm Jim Stevenson in Washington. Police in India have put on hold efforts to retrieve the body of an American who was presumably killed by a secluded tribe on an island off the Indian mainland. The move came after anthropologists, researchers, and an international rights group had urged authorities to call off the search, saying it posed a risk to the hunter-gatherer tribe. John Allen Chow went to the prohibited North Sentinel Island on a mission to convert the tribe to Christianity. Tribe members reportedly shot him dead with arrows. Fishermen said they spotted tribe members dragging him and burying the body in the sand. Since then, police grappled with the challenge of recovering the 27-year-old's body from an island that has been off-limits for centuries and whose inhabitants have defied all attempts by outsiders for contact. The latest attempt to get close to the island was abandoned Saturday after police, who had stopped their boat about 400 meters from the shore, spotted the Sentinelese standing armed with bows and arrows. In a statement, Survivor International called the search incredibly dangerous for both the tribe and officials. VOA Asia's Ira Melman asked a spokesman for Survivor International, Jonathan Mazower, to explain why his organization felt that the Sentinelese should be left alone.
Because uncontacted tribes have the right to be left alone, and attempting to recover Mr. Chow's body would be incredibly dangerous, both for those trying to do the recovering and also for the Sentinelese themselves, who have made it very clear they don't want outsiders coming onto their island, who've killed Mr. Chow and others in the past who have done so, and who crucially have no immunity to very common outside diseases, which, if they are introduced into that island, could very well devastate the Sentinelese. So I'm sorry to say that the safest thing to do is simply to do nothing, to stay away, not to try to recover the body. And I'm glad that the Indian authorities have now accepted that. They've listened to us and to other people in the Andamans and so on, who were saying the same thing, that tragic though the case is and sad though it is for Mr. Chow's family, unfortunately, the sensible thing to do in this situation is simply to stay away.
How do you know with such a reclusive group of people that they indeed are not immune to diseases from the rest of the world?
Well, we can look at the situation of similar tribes elsewhere, who have been in that situation, who have been forcibly contacted and who very often have been utterly decimated by diseases that to us are not fatal, like flu, the common cold, chickenpox, and so on, that to them are fatal. I myself have spent many weeks with tribal peoples in different countries in South America, for example, where they were contacted some decades ago, but the people are still incredibly ill. Many of them died in the years following contact. So, and we know also that the Sentinelese have been living on that island for thousands of years, and it therefore seems highly likely that they have simply never encountered these kinds of diseases and therefore have no immunity to them.
But they are human beings living on the planet Earth. Why should they not be culpable in the murder of a human being?
Well, I think they, to call it murder is to sort of assume a kind of acceptance of the rules of Western society, if you like, that, of course, the Sentinelese have never had any part in, as far as they were concerned, if one looks at it from their point of view. What they probably have in their collective memory is the memory of an attempt by a British colonial official about 150 years ago to land on that island. He did land on the island and he kidnapped some members of that tribe and took them to a neighboring island where the adults promptly died of disease. And he then brought the children back to North Sentinel Island and left them there. So they very likely have in their memory the idea that outsiders cause trouble and bring death. And they have made it abundantly plain that they're going to defend their island by force if necessary. And considering what's happened to them in the past and also to neighboring tribes on the other islands whose populations have already been decimated after the British colonized those islands in the 19th century, the indigenous population of the islands have never recovered and thousands of people died. And the Sentinelese have very wisely stuck to their own island, and their right to want to be left alone, I think, should be respected.
Survivor International spokesman Jonathan Mazower speaking from London via Skype. Chow went to the island in mid-November after paying fishermen to take him there, and despite being shot by arrows, he returned there the next day. Happening now in Asia, police in Cambodia have arrested more than 200 Chinese citizens accused of defrauding people in China over the internet. The director of the Interior Ministry's Department of Counterterrorism and Transnational Crime said 36 women were among the 235 Chinese arrested in three different villages. VOA keeps you up to date. You're listening to VOA Asia. We're glad to have you with us today on VOA Asia. Back in 2008, the eight nations of the South Asian Association for Regional Cooperation, or SARC, agreed to create the South Asian University in New Delhi. It's an institution meant to serve as a center of excellence for students from different countries in the South Asian region. But students from India's long-standing rival, Pakistan, had often failed to gain admission for various reasons. But this year, five Pakistani students have been enrolled. VOA's Rital Josi recently visited the university to see how these students are adjusting to life in a country that is often seen as an enemy back home.
Assalamu alaikum, mami ji.
Wa alaikum assalam.
Kudiyan ne mainu keh rahe hai tumhare.
Sufian Zia, a Pakistani student at the South Asian University campus in New Delhi, can connect with his family on a video call. But for his family, this is the closest they'll ever get to the country where they have their roots.
My grandparents were originally from India. I have a part of this land in me. I always thought if I don't get to see this country, it would be such a big loss.
A resident of Karachi, Pakistan, Maliha Khan too was drawn to the South Asian University out of a strong desire to experience life across the border.
I always wanted to come here because there is this fascination of what lies across the border and what people are like there.
Zia and Khan are among the five Pakistani students who were accepted to the university this year. Set up in 2010, the university aims to provide a world-class education to students from the SAARC countries. but running a university is not cheap. The capital cost of the university, along with 50% of its operational cost, is paid for by the Indian government. The rest of the budget is shared by the other member nations. But in 2017, Pakistan failed to pay its share, and so Pakistani students were denied admission during the last academic year.
Although that should not be the cause for stopping the visa of a student. But this year, Pakistan has given more of its share. Whatever's remaining will eventually get here too.
Mingling freely with each other, the students at the university say they enrich each other's understanding of the region and gain a deeper insight into the region's rivalries.
We all live in harmony here. There are no issues amongst us.
In the last 22 years, whatever opinions I had formed about people of Pakistan and Afghanistan have been proven wrong here. I always imagined them as rude people, but they are all very sweet.
In 2016, a spike in tensions between India and Pakistan led to the postponement of the 19th SAARC summit. No summit has taken place since then. But these geopolitical tensions do not deter the students from coming together. Ritul Joshi, VOA News, New Delhi, India.
Coming up, an expensive lesson in knowing your market before you advertise. You're listening to VOA Asia.
VOA Special English. A way to learn American English and much more. Broadcasting a half hour of world news and features every day on radio. You can also find Special English on television and online at voaspecialenglish.com. For 50 years, helping people understand world events and the language and culture of America.
This news from VOA Asia. Hundreds of scholars say countries must hit China with sanctions over the mass detention of ethnic Uyghurs in its western Xinjiang region, warning that a failure to act would signal acceptance of psychological torture of innocent civilians. Beijing has, in recent months, faced an outcry from activists. VOA Asia Facebook has this and much more to see and share. This is VOA Asia. As VOA Asia continues, a marketing miss and declining rubber prices are the topics on today's VOA Asia Business Scene with Skylar Ogden.
Promotional Instagram videos put out by Italian designer Dolce & Gabbana have sparked strong reaction in China. Consumers have called them stereotypical and derogatory. The videos feature a Chinese woman using chopsticks to eat pizza and other Italian food. Actor Nathan Rich performed in a parody video shortly after, in which he is seen struggling to use a knife and fork to eat Chinese buns.
Chinese people are watching this video going, "What is this? You want us to buy your stuff, and this is how you're representing us?"
In a video, the designers Domenico Dolce and Stefano Gabbana apologize for the advertisements. Dolce said, "We love your culture, and we certainly have much to learn. That is why we are sorry if we made mistakes in the way we expressed ourselves." Despite the apology, the backlash has been strong. Dolce & Gabbana had to cancel a major show in Shanghai, and many Chinese retailers have stopped selling the label altogether. Sun Lina was another actor in the parody video.
"They don't understand Chinese culture. They don't know how ordinary Chinese people eat Western food. They're using their imagination to define Chinese people. It's very obvious that some Westerners and their brands have stereotypical impressions of Chinese people."
Chinese purchases at home and abroad account for about 30% of global luxury goods sales for the Italian designer. Prices for Thai rubber have plummeted to about $1.21 a kilogram, from approximately $6 per kilogram 7 years ago. Prices have been falling for years, but a slump in Chinese demand brought on by the U.S.-China trade war is making it worse. Karakot Kittipol is the marketing manager for the Thai Hua Rubber Company.
"China and U.S. trade war has affected the demand for this year because of the China is the biggest consumption in the world. We export to China, yes. Around nearly 40% to China."
Thailand is the world's biggest producer and exporter of rubber, making almost 40% of global production. Thai Latex makes everything from tires and condoms to baby pacifiers and surgical gloves. The ruling junta in Thailand is trying to address the supply-side issues by reducing the area under cultivation by more than 60,000 hectares per year over the next 5 years. In the meantime, many farmers have left to find factory work, and those who remain are struggling. Supawadi Jurukhan has been a rubber farmer for 10 years.
Since prices have gone down, I have had to work more. Before, I used to tap rubber trees only in one plantation. Now I also work in other plantations. I start working at 5 p.m. and I finish at 10 a.m. It's very difficult.
President Trump and Chinese President Xi Jinping will meet later this month at the G20 summit in Argentina. But hope for progress on trade issues remains tepid, as neither side appears ready to make a deal. For VOA's Business Scene, I'm Skylar Ogden.
This news from VOA Asia. Ben LeCompte has given up his attempt to swim across the Pacific Ocean after a storm broke the mainsail of his support ship. The French-American man had completed nearly 2,800 kilometers of the 9,260-kilometer journey. He called the premature end of the swim a deep disappointment. Your journey is never complete without a visit to VOA Asia Facebook. Now in VOA Asia, present-day humans are not the only people to have had a profound effect on their surroundings. VOA's Rick Pantaleo takes a moment to explain.
This is Science in a Minute.
A growing body of scientific evidence has suggested that our prehistoric ancestors were responsible for the extinction of a number of large mammal species in Africa. The research suggests that large mammals were becoming extinct at a faster rate than smaller animals, starting around the time when early humans began making and using stone tools and weapons. Among the large, now extinct animals that roamed Africa were gigantic woolly mammoths, along with a variety of early hippos, giraffes, and white and black rhinos. A new study from a group of U.S. scientists suggests that a long-term environmental change, such as dropping atmospheric carbon dioxide, and not our early human ancestors, were mostly responsible for the disappearance of these large, ancient, and mostly plant-eating mammal species beginning about 4.6 million years ago. I'm VOA's Rick Pantaleo.
NASA scientists were ecstatic Monday when they received word from 54 million kilometers away that their newest mission to Mars had arrived safely. The probe is called InSight, and true to its name, officials say it's going to give scientists new insight into what's inside the red planet. VOA's Kevin Enix reports.
Touchdown confirmed.
And with that, the InSight sent back word to Earth that after 6 months and 482 million kilometers, it had made a successful landing on the red planet. The probe has a unique two-year mission to take a look inside our closest planetary neighbor. Scientists are hoping to listen for so-called Mars quakes and put together a detailed map of the planet's interior. InSight will do this by putting little seismic probes onto the Martian surface.
We're going to also have a heat flow and physical properties probe, which will penetrate into the Mars surface about 5 meters or 16 feet to take the temperature of Mars.
This is the first time a NASA probe will be dropping experiments directly onto the surface. It will put little shields on top of them to protect them from any bad Martian weather. Adding that to what we know about Earth's formation should help NASA better understand the other rocky planets in our solar system, and also worlds beyond our quarter of space. Kevin Enix, VOA News.
You've been listening to VOA Asia. Find us on iTunes and SoundCloud. We're, of course, on VOA Asia Facebook every day, and our website, voanews.com, where you can find not only today's program, but programs from days past, all in their entirety, in case you happen to have missed something. You can also find us on the radio, Chiang Mai University Radio, FM 100 at Chiang Mai University in Thailand. We thank everyone there who's tuned in today. And our thanks, as always, go to our director, Tracy Carter, engineer Glenn Hollis, managing editor Diane Gao, Skylar Ogden, Ira Melman, Doug Bernard, Keith Lane, and Anna Cook. They're all part of our VOA Asia team. I'm Jim Stevenson. We're in Washington. Have a great day.